Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Thank you for tuning in once again. And before we get started, I just want to remind you that just because you may hear reference to some specific tax strategies or two, or you hear about a syndicated investment opportunity in a multifamily real estate transaction, among others, please don't run out and make a decision to put your money into play. Let's have you go talk to your existing advisors, legal, accounting, tax, investment, real estate mentors, et cetera, and make sure that somebody else agrees with you, and that more importantly, or agrees with what you thought you heard, and more importantly, believes that it fits your current facts and circumstances. And for those of you that are listening that don't have those types of advisors, you're more than welcome to go to our BAPlannerShow.com website, and towards the top under the title, you will see a series of links, and you can click the forms link, and on that page, complete step one at a minimum, the client profile form. And then once you've got that done, proceed to the link right next to forms, which is call, and you can set up a call with either Dan DuBose or myself or both, where we'll assess how we might be able to sync up with your goals or help you with achieving your goals and objectives. And you know, there's a lot of different ways to get there, but the bottom line is, if you're in your mid-50s and behind on getting to several million dollars of retirement wealth, you got a rough road to hoe if you don't get started now. And it is feasible to get to a point where you'll effectively have enough funding for retirement. But the good old days when you could say, well, I've got $1 million in my 401 or my IRA, I should be okay, those are gone. That train has already left. And for the 50% of all American couples that end up experiencing long-term health care issues or chronic illness, unless you have an unusually good long-term health care insurance plan, $1 million is going to be seriously decimated by the cost of medical care, plus the tax that you're going to pay when you take that money out to either pay your normal living expenses or your medical bills. And there's multiple ways of dealing with that. I know we've got clients that we've assisted undertaking some cash value life insurance. We promote the index universal life concept, where you not only get a death benefit, you have the ability to take loans out on the cash value, where if they're structured properly, you can use that money for whatever you would like without having to pay tax on it. But more importantly, you have the ability to, for little or no cost, add a rider for long-term health care coverage and or chronic illness. And what will happen if you're in a situation where you are one of the 50% of all American couples, where one of you will experience significant health issues that take a lot of money, the Index Universal Life with the rider added to it will actually pay for those long-term health care costs out of your death benefit. So it'll advance your death benefit for purposes of paying for long-term health care. So it's an efficient way to attack the problem. The other 50% won't need long-term health care coverage. So why would you want to spend $15,000 to $20,000 a year for those premiums? It's very expensive insurance. And the Index Universal Life policies, by the way, are not cheap, but when you consider you've got a four-prong benefit, essentially, it's pretty rational insurance coverage. I'm not an insurance fan at all, but this is one exception to the rule for me, and I would strongly encourage you, if you're in good health now, consider adding that coverage. And my associate, Dan DuBose, will be the one to speak with. If you do want to talk to Dan, send me a message. In fact, I forgot to mention, if you want to suggest a topic for discussion today or in the future, or you want to ask a question, you can text me at real time. You can text me at 713-581-0195. And I guess I should say it's real time unless you hear this, for instance, in Phoenix or in San Bernardino, Riverside, L.A., or a couple other markets, and it's a recording. So, but you can still text that number. It just won't be real time. I'll get it, and I'll definitely respond to you. Okay, well, I mentioned the baplannershow.com site, and as we normally do this time, I'm going to go to that site and go to the news page, which is under resources, the top right resources link, and I've added a bevy of new articles this week. I went crazy adding some really good ones, and I didn't have time to get them all, so by the time we circle back tomorrow or maybe by the Sunday show, I may have added a few more. But let's get started. Let me make sure. Yeah, I did update this page. So you will see the first article on the news page under the current discussion area is 9 tax deadlines for April the 15th. And I'm assuming you realize that April the 15th is Monday, and you've got, most likely, if you're listening to this show, you've got a tax return due. But that's just one of 9 deadlines that happen on Monday. And let's go through the list here. Let's see. Looking at the article, the first one is, of course, the tax filing deadline. Could cost you, if you don't file it, could cost you a failure to file. If you don't file the extension, can cost you a failure to file penalty, which I think a lot of people, a lot of CPAs get confused on the difference between a failure to file versus a failure to pay. And it would seem intuitive that the failure to pay would be the more expensive penalty. It's not. It's counterintuitive. It's the failure to file, and it's 5% per month for each month or partial month that you failed to either file a return or file an extension. We take extensions very seriously for that matter, and in fact, I don't mind so much paying 0.5% per month, which is what the failure to pay penalty is, 0.5% plus you've got interest at an annual rate now of 8%. That's gone way up in the recent past with inflation. Used to be 3%. We just kind of winked at it because it was cheaper just to pay the interest on what should have been paid in than it was to jump through hoops to figure out how much you owe. It's probably not the case with most people, but even in some cases, it's still cheaper than paying your professionals 4 times a year to figure out what your estimated tax payments should be. But in any event, so Monday, the first deadline is the federal tax return. Second deadline is the extension on Monday if you don't file a return. I think we've already mentioned that. Third deadline is the deadline to pay any taxes that are due on Monday. So they're really beating up on Monday the 15th. Okay, now we're into some new territory. Number four is the deadline to contribute to your HSA, your health savings accounts, for 2023. And so you want to be careful to check what you may have already contributed so you don't go over the contribution limit. Otherwise, you'll end up paying a penalty, and I've forgotten how much that is. But it's enough to where you don't want to go over it. You can contribute up to $3,850 for self only coverage, or $7,750 for family coverage. And then those of us folks that are older, over 55, can contribute an additional $1,000. Employer contributions also count toward the contribution limits, so don't forget to check those amounts as well. The fifth deadline is the deadline to contribute to an IRA for 2023. And you have, just like with the HSA, you have until tax day, Monday, to contribute to either a traditional or a Roth account that will affect your, or can affect your 2023 tax return. Obviously, the Roth is not going to help you much. But in any event, there's also limits. You can contribute up to $6,500 unless you're 50 or older, and then it's $7,500. And the total contributions between all your IRA accounts have to be summed up towards that limit. You also have until April 15th to contribute to your employees, if you're a business, SEP IRA accounts. And let's see. Yes, you can deduct. It's still 25% of employee compensation or the amount of your contributions, whichever is less. You can correct, the sixth deadline is you can, on Monday, you can correct excess IRA contributions. If you accidentally contributed too much to your 2023 IRA, otherwise known as ineligible contributions, you still have time to correct the mistake. Withdrawing the excess contributions by April the 15th will spare you from a 6% penalty. Thankfully, IRA contribution limits are higher for 2024 than last year, so it might make sense to apply the excess over to this tax year instead. Seventh deadline is contributing to your solo 401k plan, or what we refer to as a self-directed 401 trust. It's what we work with a lot of our clients on. Self-employed taxpayers have until April the 15th to contribute to solo K accounts. This article isn't clear about that. That's just the first deadline. If you extend your return that's due April 15th, you have, and I would be referring to a for instance, a disregarded LLC that gets filed inside your 1040. If you've already extended your S-Corp that was due back in March or your multi-member LLC, then you have until September 15th to make your contribution for last year. Now, applies to 2023. In other words, you can deduct the amount that you put in, excuse me, as late as September 15th, or if it's a disregarded LLC, October 15th, which is nice to manage current year cash flow. And, you know, I'm not sure why they didn't mention that in this article. This is on Kiplinger, by the way. 3 days ago, I believe they put it out. So let's see. They're talking about the limit. Yeah, this is noteworthy, and this is one reason we like this type of account for our clients when they can qualify, is that the current year contribution, 2023, it's not the current year. The current year is even higher. But the 2023 limit on solo K contributions is $66,000, or 25% of your net adjusted self-employment income, whichever is less. If you're 55 or older, or 50 or older, I'm sorry, age 50 or older, if you're making catch-up contributions, you can contribute up to $73,500, or 25% of your net adjusted self-employment income. And when we refer to adjusted self-employment income, we have to do a gross up for the employer piece of the FICA and Medicare. In any event, it's a big number, and this year's number is even larger. I believe it's 77 if you're 50 or older and making catch-up contributions. Number eight deadline is make your first 2024 estimated tax payments. A lot of people get all disheveled worrying about the extension payment, and they fail to make that first, going to call it quarterly. They're not exactly quarterly, but that's what we call them, your quarterly estimated tax payment for the 2024 tax year is also due on April the 15th. Let's see. The last deadline doesn't affect us here in the state of Texas unless you have income from other states, like many of our clients do, and you have an extension deadline or state income tax return, possibly. Some of the states use the same federal April 15th date. Others have months with filing dates. Other, like Louisiana, I believe, is still May 15th. And even some of the states, they point out here in this article, that would otherwise use April the 15th, Massachusetts, Maine, and Virginia, or let's see, for example, some states have, for example, Patriots Day pushes the tax deadline to April 17th in Massachusetts and Maine, and in Virginia and Louisiana, tax returns are not due until May. Okay, so there's not many, but there's a few that are different. In any event, you can, of course, find all the due date information online. Okay, well, I went past the break point. Let's go ahead and take our first break. We will be back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at NPRoss.com. Nathan at NPRoss.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just going over some of the current news. And the next article that I wanted to address is one called Credit Demand. This was out on ConnectCRE.com, one of the real estate sites that I monitor. And I think, you know, anywhere we see the impact of available credit, we see it changing. Maybe it's looking up. It matters to us in the commercial real estate business. And in any event, I see it looks like I've got a link wrong. I tell you what, we'll come back to this article later in the show. I'll get that fixed on the next break. But, again, there may be some thawing. The gist of the article is that more lenders are starting to fill their coffers again with the type of capital that they can put into commercial real estate endeavors, and that's what it's going to take to try to turn the tide with what we're seeing now. Let's go down to the next article, and this is a topic near and dear to our hearts because, as I mentioned earlier, we have a lot of clients that have self-directed 401 trust, and one of the requirements of being able to start one of those accounts is that you have to have self-employment income. And self-employment income does not mean that you have to be a consultant billing, you know, several hundred thousand dollars a year, or that you're a lawyer, et cetera, doing the same. It's a side hustle. Side hustle qualifies. And, you know, if you've got a significant amount of money in your current 401k at a larger employer, but you want to invest in alternative investments like real estate private partnership syndications, maybe in multifamily, which is what the large majority of our clients do, you can't really do that from an account that Fidelity or Charles Schwab or UBS is administering, which most of the larger companies have. One of those firms, Fidelity's probably got the biggest chunk of that market when it comes to administration. And so if you are able to roll that money over, and I know a lot of people listening to our show, especially here today in the Houston market, are likely not aware that you don't have to be 59 and a half, or you don't have to quit your job or separate from the employer to access those funds. You can access the funds provided you live in the great state of Texas and you're married. You can access those funds and repartition the funds out of your employer plan into a self-directed 401 that your spouse starts up. And we'll show you how to do that. And it's great if you want to control your money, invest in things like real estate, either directly or indirectly. We like the passive route where you're putting your money with a syndicator, sponsor, you know, lead partner, someone that's been to the finish line. You know, we try to avoid first-timers, although I've seen a lot of first-timers make a lot of money when it's, you know, when you're dealing with Class C apartment projects that you can buy in a state of disrepair that lets you add value. Renovating, putting up-to-date amenity sets in, and being able to raise market rates more in line with the market. And I've seen it time and again play out over the last 20 years since we've been working in this space, where a group of partners can buy such a property and within a year or two or three have pulled out 80 to 100% of their money on a refinance. And I know it sounds crazy, and I know it sounds hokey, and I've heard and read the articles, you know, that say, nah, that's a pipe dream, that can't happen. Well, I've got hard examples that I know it does happen, seen it happen, do tax returns for clients where it's happened. And I'm going to suggest to you, if you're behind on your retirement wealth, I'm not suggesting you go put every dollar you have, but I'm suggesting you get enough dollars into the commercial real estate space involving multifamily. There's a few other segments that also have better than average returns. The industrial sector right now is doing well. The difference is you don't find mom and pop opportunities with industrial type properties. You might with some retail. But and retail's not doing too bad right now, but multifamily is still the lowest hanging fruit. And you know, you can invest with somebody that you can walk the property with, you can hug them, you can punch them, you know, whatever you need to do at some point. It's not like a REIT that you'll buy on public markets where you'll never meet the folks that are running those projects. You'll never have any input into decision making, and you're not going to drive the wagon certainly on a small private syndication offering, but at least you'll know who the lead partner is, they'll know you, and you'll probably have 80 to 100 other partners. You're not going to put more than, you know, $100,000 to $200,000 into any one transaction, or you wouldn't. If I were working with you, I'd suggest you don't. But hey, we're all adults. You do what you want to do, but I know the ones that I invest in, I've never done more than $100,000, and that's what I would urge everyone to do. Until you know how this partner or syndicator performs, and even then, you know, if you back up 3 years, everybody looked like a genius. Everybody wanted to be a syndicator. And now that pond has shrunk significantly, and if you weren't investing with syndicators that had a strong balance sheet and had you know, a readily available reserve of cash to weather interest rate increases, property tax increases, let's not forget insurance premium increases 3 to 4 times in some cases. That takes a strong balance sheet, and you either need to be able to, as a syndicator, to go borrow more money or have the reserves to put into it. Or I have an idea, one of my pet peeves, how about having the syndicator claw back some of the funds, the fees that they took up front out of the passive Partners Capital. That's where I would start if we had an ability to impact that with the transactions our clients are in. And some syndicators have been willing to structure those fees towards the back end of a deal instead of the front, but they're few and far between. In any event, I grabbed this article just because it had an amazing, I thought, tagline. The percentage of small businesses launched as side hustles last year, this is 2023, was nearly double the share in 2022. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. Some of it is no doubt necessity. I mean, there's a lot of people these days that are taking on second jobs. And, I guess it's hard to know whether it's more of a hobby or whether it's necessity without knowing the people involved. I know I've got a few clients that have side gigs, and in some cases the side gig eventually becomes their main gig. And so I guess depending on how successful you are at it and how you view it, that could happen if you were to start. But I know this, if you got a side gig, you're probably qualified to take undertake a solo K, a self-directed 401 trust, and roll your other money into it, where now you can control your money. You determine who, when, where, and how much to invest, and even when to pay yourself. You can pay yourself just like you can out of your IRA, as long as you're ready to pay the tax and penalty if you're under the age of 59 and a half. In any event, this article points out there are a number of reasons or multiple factors contributed to the surge. The rise in remote and hybrid work has created a lot of flexibility for time and space. And there's also the inflation factor, where people realized, hey, I'm not going to make enough money to cover my expanded lifestyle, which maybe you weren't even trying to do. It's just you turn around and everything costs more, right? So really hard inflation for the last full year and a half. And then you look at what the economic output is or outlook is now. I mean, when you've got people like Jamie Dimon, one of the biggest banks in America, saying that we're in for a rough patch upcoming, that ought to get your attention. And I didn't put that article on our news page. I may try to do that between now and tomorrow or Sunday. Jamie Dimon is usually right more often than not, or at least a lot of his prognostications have been correct, and I would tend to give him the benefit of the doubt on this one. He's not the only one saying that we're going to have an issue with continued inflation, high interest rates, etc. Let's see, we got about a minute left before our break. Let me, I'll just mention this next article. Graystar takes the crown as the top U.S. apartment owner, at least for the moment. And, they're a huge management operation, owner, et cetera. They own or manage more than 1 million apartment units in the U.S. That's a pretty staggering number. And they just added 10,000 units in 2023, primarily in the Sun Belt, bringing that area's total, that portfolio, to 108,000 units. In addition to the units it owns, Graystar is managing 789,000 around the country. And I know we've got clients that have employed Graystar. Let's see. Okay, well, I think that's enough on that topic. Kudos to Graystar. They do a great job for most properties that I've had tangential involvement with just through clients. But and anyway, it doesn't really matter unless it's your property, but they have a good reputation. Well, listen, let's take our second break, and we'll be back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones have made up my life. But I shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. But I hope that you'll tell me, well done, my child. You've won your reward through your sacrifice. Your sacrifice.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make it.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And let's back up to the article that I had the link wrong on. I've fixed that. It's called Credit Demand. And I wanted to, this is on Connect, it's Connect CRE, but it's their Connect Money subsite, and they're one of the white paper type companies. They do studies on assorted commercial real estate issues, and the current fall that we have, I think, is taking place in the market. Hopefully will do even more, but let's go through this article just briefly. I kind of always recoil at the words like average and just the perspective that some articles are written from. Like this article starts off with inflation forecast to continue to fall, albeit gradually, and the Fed Reserve predicted to begin cutting interest rates in the second half of the year. I just had another article. In fact, I don't think I put it up yet, but I will, that talks about why we may not get a cut at all this year. And it's from a reputable source. I didn't have a chance to get it uploaded, but I'll do that. And I'll tell you right now, and I said this, let's see, it would have been on Sunday's show, that based on everything that I've read, and I think Jamie Dimon, again, his shareholder letter sure leaves you with the impression that he's not so sure there's going to be any rate cuts here in the current year. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I want to be positive, but I also know the reality. And I'll tell you this, whether there's rate cuts or not, it's not going to be enough to really move the needle much when it comes to interest rates on commercial real estate loans. And I'll tell you, for those of us in the multifamily space, I think you're looking at 7-8% for a while, which, by the way, if you look at history, that's about the average mortgage rate, I think, over the last 60 to 70 years, if I'm not mistaken. It's in the 7-8% range. So, you know, when you look at where we're at this second, it's kind of normal. You know, I can remember in the early to mid 80s, they were a lot higher than 8%, 7%. I remember working when I was with a big firm that had partners old enough to be my dad or granddad, and they had 5-6% mortgage rates. Here, you know, I was buying a home at age 25, and the rate was, I think, 12-14%. We were lucky. We had assumed that rate. But, you know, I hear people complaining about 7-8%. Hey, I think the bottom line is you got to underwrite your deal and assume that almost everybody else is in the same scenario, unless you can assume debt, which that's possible with some loan structures that might already be in place with the property you want to buy. Of course, the seller is not stupid. They know that that's a premium that they should build into the purchase price. And then the other issue is you're going to have to refinance at some point. And look at what's happened to people right now that did debt structures 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Now the bell tolls for thee, so to speak, and they've got to find new money. And lenders are it's never easy to convince a lender to lend you a loan on a piece of real estate necessarily. I mean, it's never a slam dunk, especially if you don't have a good story to tell about what you've done to execute your business plan. And, you know, if you've got, I mean, we've got one syndicator we've worked with our clients with to introduce them to them that is developing in the Austin submarket in the Lockhart area. Those folks have done what they said they would do. They bought a property, 140 units on the ground that was a couple years old, 90%+ occupied now, and they have built the second 140 units with on the acreage that came with it, and they're, I think, right past the point of having it dried in. They're right on target, seemingly. I'd have to go back and look at the videos early on that describe the opportunity, but you know, the bottom line is that syndicator has done what he said he would, and those are the kind you want to marry up with when you decide to invest in a partnership, and you'd like it to be somebody as professional as that operation where you basically are hands off. You didn't have to do anything to find it, underwrite it, go get debt for it. You sure didn't have to sign on the debt in any capacity, be it joint and several full recourse or qualified non-recourse for the industry carve-outs, the bad boy provisions. And you didn't have to go find staff to manage it. You didn't have to find tenants to lease to. You're passive. It's the definition of the word. And I don't want to make it sound like it's mailbox money, but it's about the closest thing you can have when, you know, there's nothing assured about a real estate investment, just like there's nothing assured when you buy Apple stock or, you know, whoever stock. I use Apple because that's one that tends to have some variability, goes up and down, although overall it's way up from when I held it. I'll rather not talk about that. But in any event, I'll get back on point here. Investors are mulling whether now's the time to invest in real estate and if debt, equity, or both is the best option. I would suggest to you in the syndication market, it's rare that equity is going to be the best option, at least total equity. I mean, you're looking at, I don't know, the transactions are starting to come back a little bit where you're seeing some 60-40 splits or even 70-30 on the LTV type variable. So, you know, if you've got a $10 million loan here a few months ago, you were fortunate to get a $5 million. I'm sorry, if you've got a $10 million property, you'd be lucky to get a $5 million loan. Now it's more common to get a $6 million or $6.5 million with either $3.5 or $4 million in capital being raised by the partners. We hope to get back someday to the classic 80% loan-to-value ratio, where $8 million is the debt amount, $2 million would be the equity. But in any event, regarding real estate debt, the current risk-adjusted return profile is appealing to debt providers. Rising interest rates have positively impacted the investment returns, and the thresholds for granting new loans are gradually decreasing, as I mentioned. This is especially true when borrowers demonstrate their commitment to the underlying assets and either contribute additional funds to the transaction or have the ability to do so. And I know nobody likes a cash call. And again, depends on the syndicator involved. There's right ways and wrong ways to reach out to your partners for more money. And we could spend an entire show on that topic. I can give you illustrations of where it was not done well. And I give you others where it was done well. And, you know, I would tell you, you got to look at each cash call independently. And every once in a while, you may see one where you just say, hey, I'm not in for any more cash. I'll take the dilution hit. You know, my interest will be a lower percentage, but that's better in this case than putting good money after bad. So we do see that occasionally. Anyway, going on with the article, the head of, let's see, this guy's in Europe, LaSalle Investment Management, says, we expect to see robust demand for debt financing solutions provided by real estate investment funds. This is due to both recent market developments and longer-term structural trends. Of course, he's in the business of making loans, so you would expect some positive spin to this. In the shorter term, borrowers have begun to adapt to a higher cost of financing. Well, yeah, that's what you should be doing if you're underwriting transactions. I'd prefer you do that as opposed to overcapitalizing just right out of the chute. Make some assumptions about 3 years, 5 years, maybe 7 years out, because real estate is cyclical. It may not have the up and down yo-yo effect of the stock market, but it's not always just pointing upward. Now, that we know. If you've watched this for 20 years like I have, you've seen the good and the bad and the ugly. The mid-80s was the first down cycle that I saw, and literally developers were committing suicide, at least in Houston. And it was a horrible time, and it was the time that in my infinite wisdom I picked my partner and I, business partner, started our own practice right at the low point, you know, late December 84, and we didn't know any better. Thankfully, we're young and stupid, or we would have never done it, and we never looked back. We were very fortunate. But in any event, I know a lot of folks in the real estate business back then, they signed personal guarantees. They got smart by 2008 and 9 when the debt malaise arrived. Everybody was using capital that they had raised. They weren't borrowing 100%. But in any event, continuing on, we expect alternate providers of capital, this would be private equity, to have a significant opportunity to lend on high-quality, well-located real estate at attractive yields and terms, noted a gentleman that's partner and head of real estate credit at KKR. And I've forgotten, it's Kravis something and what, Reynolds maybe, I've forgotten. But KKR, big player in the private equity arena, and despite Federal Reserve Chair Jay Powell's dovish policy pivot in December, some analysts expect interest rates to remain higher for longer, lengthening the opportunity to offer funding for property acquisitions and refinancings if you're in the alternative lending space. In any event, well, let's see if I can squeeze in one more article before we depart for this week. The Blackstone article, just want to mention Blackstone bit off their biggest, I think it's the biggest multifamily. Yeah, it's the largest transaction they have done, $10 billion. They bought a community or a set of communities known as AIR, the apartment income REIT, and 76 rental housing communities. Blackstone plans to invest another $400 million to improve the properties, and that's a notable chunk of real estate. And again, it's the largest that they've done in the multifamily space. So in any event, I see we're close to the end of the show. I suspect the music will start playing shortly, so let me just say thank you for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. right here on the same station, KSEV, AM 700, and we hope you can join us. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.